Today is Wednesday, May 8th, Yom HaZikaron. This is the Women's Chumashir. We're at the beginning of Perek Yudchet and Sefer Bereshit. Okay. Okay, Rabotai, we are up to Bereshit, Perek Yudchet. We start at the beginning, have been proceeding slowly. In terms of, we always proceed slowly, but we're up to Pasuk Vav. After making the statement, The three guests told Avraham to do exactly as he had spoken. Kein taaseh kasher dibarta. The only thing that he told them, based on the text, is that he would provide bread for them. And now the Torah is going to describe what he actually prepared for them. Vayimaher Avraham ha'oela el Sarah. Avraham goes quickly into the tent to Sarah. Vayomer, and he says, Mahari, quickly, prepare. Shlosh tzi'im kemach solet, 3 sa'ah, which is a huge amount of wheat flour. Lushi v'asi ugot, you'll need it and you'll make ugot. Ve'el habakar ratz Avraham. Vayikach ben bakar rach vatov. He took a calf that is a young and very good. Vayitein el anar. He gave it to a lad. Vayimaher la asot oto. Vayikach chema v'chalav uben bakar asher asah. Vayitein lifnehem. V'hu omed aleihem tachat ha'etz vayochelu. That is this three pasuk segment, a very detailed description of what Avraham is now serving to his guests. So we always start with Rashi, and then we'll see alternate interpretations of what's happening here, and it's certainly interesting midrashim as well. So Rashi says on pasuk vav, Rashi is troubled why the pasuk says kemach solet. The word kemach means flour. Solet means refined flour, and always throughout the Chumash refers to wheat. Wheat flour, exactly. So once it says the word solet, as it appears hundreds of times in the Chumash, every single time we read a Korban Musaf, Solet Mincha Belula Bashemen, every Shabbat, Uviyom HaShabbat Shnei Chavasim B'nei Shana Tmimim Ushnei Esronim Solet. It doesn't say Kemach Solet. Obviously, Solet is Kemach. It's refined wheat flour. So Rashi is troubled, and he was not the originator of this. We'll see this in the Midrash itself. Why does the Torah write Kemach Solet? Answers Rashi. Solet la'ugot. It actually refers to 2 separate ingredients. It's not that it's Solet is an adjective describing what type of Kemach. That's not what it is. It's Kemach, comma, and Solet. The solet, the refined wheat grain, a wheat flour, is la'ugot, for whatever she was planning on baking. Kemach le'amalan shel tabachim. Kemach is for some of the tricks of the trade of cooks, tabachim, tabach. What are some of the cooks of the trade? that when you have a lot of moisture, the way to get rid of the moisture is to put some flour in, and the flour draws out the moisture and it gets stuck. Just unbelievable why you come to the class to learn about new trade, tricks of the trade. And what is that? Lichasot et hakidera, to cover the pot. Lishov et hazuhama, to suck up, to draw out whatever is considered dangerous.
Contamination.
What?
Contamination.
Contamination, pollution, whatever it is, it's going to drag it out.
It's like skimming the top of the soup.
Right. So here, Rashi says, it's not the simple way which we would interpret kemach then solet. It's kemach kama solet. Yeah.
Amilan is starch.
What?
Amilan in modern Hebrew, if you read the ingredients, is
starch. Perfect.
And that's what the flour does. The flour acts like starch.
Very good. Excellent. Very good. That's
what you said.
That amilan in modern Hebrew is starch.
Amilan.
Oh. La amalan. Amal can be the work efforts, and it's very good. Amilan meaning starch. Very good. Very good. Yeah. That's how Rashi says it. Now, if you take a look at others, so let's start with Chizkuni on the bottom of the right hand side of page number 1. So, as the Gush Gang has always taught us, when you have a unit and you want to gain something about a unit, what is one of the first things you're supposed to look for? First things you're supposed to look for. What? Correct. You've been to enough of those shiurim. All right. Repeated words or repeated phrases. So what word seems to be used here quite frequently? Maher, vayimaher, mahari, vayaratz Avraham, ve'ela bakar, ratz Avraham. What's life there? What's he running all the time? What's he got to be fast? What's got to be fast? Okay, so perhaps. So he says, Chizkuni says, Lefi shahaya lohem lolechet atzdom be'oto yom. Assuming that these are angels, and that Avraham is fully aware of the fact that they are angels, and they already revealed what part of their mission is all about. You have to make all of these assumptions. Now we understand, says Chizkuni, why does it say Mahari? Because these people have to travel considerable distance, and most people at that time did not, I would say all people at that, did not travel at night. They always traveled daytime only. And as a result, when Abraham shared this with them, he understood that these guys are in a rush. If they are in a rush, I'm going to make an effort to accommodate them, and therefore it's Vayimaher, Mahari, Ratz Avraham, and so on and so forth. It has nothing to do with the fact that when you do a mitzvah, you should do it with great haste. This is nothing to do with a mitzvah. This is simply based on the fact that he knew, Avram did, where they were headed at this particular time. Even it is possible that you don't have to claim that he was three angels. This could have been three guests. And just in the course of the conversation, Avram could have said, "Where are you headed, guys?" And that would be a normal topic. They're passing by him. So even though they, I'm sure they would not have revealed what they were planning on doing, because the first indication that these people are here to deliver a message is in the pasuk, which we will read next week. It's in the next pasuk right after, where they say, "Where is Sarah?" They want to inform her that she's going to have a child. That's the first of the three missions. And as a result, they could just have said, "You know what?" He asked, "Where are you headed?" "Oh, we're headed to Stone." Avram knows where Stone is, knows that they're planning to get there or would like to get there before dark. And as a result, he decides to make a dash for it. That's what he says. However, one second. If you go to page number 5 for a minute, and I made up these numbers before last night's Yankee game, otherwise it would have been 29 and 26, right? Heck of a win last night, that's for sure. It would always help if you know what happened to the Yankees the night before, then it would be easier for me to number everything and not have to explain it all the time. You'd know who I'm referring to. So this is the Psikta, which is one of the Midrashim on Sefer Bereishit. And he writes as follows. The first line is going to trouble you, but it's a phrase often repeated. Vayimaher Avraham ha'ohela el Sarah. Why is Sarah in the tent? There's no difficulty. Tell me why there's no difficulty. Yeah, exactly. It's boiling hot outside. She's going to stay in the air-conditioned room. Why is she going to be standing outside? For what reason? Of course she's inside. That's where people live, in a tent. But the Medrash, as often it does, makes a point of telling us, why was she inside? Kol kvuda bat melech penima. Because the place, the appropriate place for the daughter of a king is inside. Not to circulate in markets. There's got to be another. Yeah, hey, I got plenty. Sorry, yeah.
Thank
no
you.
Problem. Sorry. It's okay. So they write that. In fact, I have to admit it, in the RCA statement, where they registered their formal position, anti-women's ordination, in the position paper written by 7 Rabbanim, one of the arguments which they used this. A woman should not occupy a position in a public forum. You know, she can come. Of course, she should come to Davin, but not to act. Kol kvuda bas melech penima means, according to them, not to stay inside, but not to occupy positions of authority, not to occupy public positions. And it's reinforced by that very famous Rambam, where the Rambam took a Midrash Halacha and expanded it. The Pasuk states in Parshat Shoftim, Som Tasim Alecha Melech. You shall appoint a king. So the Midrash Halacha says, Melech Velo Malka. You cannot appoint a Jewish queen for Am Yisrael. But that's all the Midrash Halacha says. The Rambam, on his own, extended it to all communal positions. He writes, even the commissioner of water, that's the example, Amas Hamayim, has to be a man, not a woman. There are other poskim who, when the need arose, said, B'mchilas kvayd HaRambam, nobody else made this point, and therefore we're going to allow it. It was a famous tshuva of Rav Moshe Feinstein, where somebody was a mashkiach of an enormous plant. Very good paying job. The husband passed away, and the wife wanted the hashkacha. The wife wanted to keep the hashkacha. And many in the plant did not want to give it because she was a woman. How can you have a mashkiach? You know? So they asked Rav Moshe Feinstein. And Rav Moshe quotes this Rambam, and he says, well, the majority of poskim don't agree with the Rambam. It's limited only to king and queen. And since there is an enormous need here for her to maintain her parnasa under those circumstances, he said she can be appointed. But the issue, one of the issues were, was that according to the Rambam, she can't be appointed as the mashgiach of a particular plant. So then the alternative would have been like Rav Gorelick Zichron Evracha's suggestion. When there was a big hashgacha, I don't want to say the person's name, and it was a debate between the son and the son-in-law whether or not who's going to get the hashgacha, Rav Gorelick said, the nifter alein that blighten by the hashgacha. The deceased is going to keep the hashgacha. So they asked him, how's that possible? He says, the zelba hashgacha v'net tigeben mechayim, can he give him take the hashgacha? The same quality hashgacha that he gave when he was alive, he can give when he was dead. That was a famous Rav Gorelick vart, and we knew who he was talking about. Yeah. So that's what he says. Now, vayomer, continuing in the Midrash, this is Vivi's comment. Mahari shlosh se'im. Zariz umizareiz b'mitzvot. He himself is a zariz, and he encourages others to act speedily. Who's the other? Sarah. Exactly. Yeah. And look at his read, the Medrash is read on the next phrase. Shlosh se'im kemach solet. On page 5. Shlosim kemach solet. Im kemach lama solet. What do I need both phrases for? Ela gimel se'in haya kemach. He took initially 3 sa'ah of flour. Vahotzia mehen sa'ah solet. From the 3 units called the sa'ah of a flour, he extracted 1 of high quality solet. That's what it means, kemach solet. It's only using 1 ingredient. That's the solet. But kemach is all types of flour. Refined flour is solet. So when you filter it, sift it a little more finely, you will wind up with 1 saw out of 3 for the production of the lushi va'asi ugot. Laha'achil, continuing, lechem chamudot. Desirable bread, not just ordinary rye bread. It was pumpernickel, or like they make today, with breads, with challahs, with chocolate chips in them, and all kinds of things. And ugot, what does this refer to? What are ugot, not knowing anything? What are ugot? Cakes, cookies, exactly. Ugot are cakes. Says the Medrash, Remez sha'asidin banav la'asot ugot, b'tzei sami mitzrayim. That she made it into matzah. She made it into matzah. And it's going to be foreshadowing that which Am Yisrael will be eating, as it states, we read it in the Haggadah. Hadahu dechsiv, vayofu et habatzek, asher hotzio mi mitzrayim ugot, ki lo chametz, not chametz. They did not allow it to rise. Why? Because they didn't, ki gorshu mi mitzrayim. They were driven out of Mitzrayim. In fact, by Lot, in the next chapter, when these angels reach Lot's house, he also offered them food, and it says, from matzot. He actually says that he baked matzos, and there, most of the commentaries say it was Pesach. Whatever that means, it was Pesach at that particular time. And this supports the tradition that Yitzchak was born during Pesach. There is a well-known Midrashic tradition that Yitzchak, and here, that would make sense. It also supports why they would have made it as matzah, and Yitzchak is going to be born a year later. So, even though there are other sources that say and upset the apple cart by saying that Yitzchak was born Rosh Hashanah time, But most believe this, and they try to associate the experience of the matzah at this particular time, although it does not say it black on blue. Yeah.
It makes sense, because if she has to hurry, she can't wait for the bread.
Good, good. So the zrizut, mahari, is to make it, you know, be careful, you know, bake it quickly. Good point.
Yeah, but that calf isn't taking any less time.
That's true.
Yeah. No, but he writes, somebody, maybe we'll read it inside, that's why he took a young calf. It's much easier and quicker to shecht than a big, big bull. Much easier. Yes, also, yes. 100%. Good. Yes?
Does this maybe indicate that matzah was part of the diet before Mitzrayim?
Well, according to this tradition, definitely yes. There is no doubt that we know the text tells us that they ate matzot throughout the 210 years of Mitzrayim. Because of the fact that their taskmasters didn't allow them an hour for lunch. They had 20 minutes for lunch, so 18 minutes was baking the matzahs. That's it. So apparently it was abundantly, you know, popular to eat matzah. Let's see something else, someone else. Take a look at Radak on the left hand side of the page. On page one again. Vayomer Shlosh Se'im, it happens to be an enormous amount of flour. Enormous amount of flour. I don't have the exact figures in, you know, ounces or pounds or things like that, but it's an enormous amount. La'asot chalat lechem shel sa'a l'chol echad derech kavod. It's an honorary gesture that you make a huge challah for each of the guests. As opposed to what we just read, that you take three sa'a and filter it, sift it, and wind up with one, and each guy gets a third of a sa'a, which is much more reasonable, each person gets their own one, that's an expression of kavod. Yeah. Kemach solet, Kemach shiyaaseh solet leugot lefi sheheim lechem rakik kidei shiyeofeh mehera. Since they're in a mad rush, I don't have any time to what? To allow it to rise, and therefore I make it matzah, a flat bread, which is much easier to prepare. Again, with the idea that these guys are in a mad rush.
Rakik is flat?
A flat. Rakikin are flat breads, which we call matzah. Yes. Continues Radak. The El Habakar Ratz. Amar Ratz, Kimosha Amar Vayimaher. Lahodia Zirezuso Vesimchato Beorchim. It's to indicate how delighted he is that he has an opportunity to engage in honoring his guests. Ula ha'achilam meitav hama'achalim, and looking forward to the opportunity to what? To feed the best of foods to his guests. And then he writes, solet, whatever, v'amar rach vatov, that in terms of the bakar, the animal, it was soft and good, v'chein ra'uy la'asot ulilmod mimidot Avraham. Don't forget, Radak believes that this whole thing is a dream. Remember, we pointed out this never happened. The angels come to Avraham in a dream because it's part of a mar'eh of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. God is sending him a message, and the way he sends him a message often, a Navi, is that he dreams. So in a dream, you get to the pertinent information. Let in the dream reveal, one guy tells him Sarah's going to have a kid. Next guy says, I'm going to destroy stone. Next guy says, I'm going to save Lot. But what do I need this whole thing with a meal? Says Radak, it's designed to teach us that we have to learn from the midot of Abraham, but again confirming the fact that it was not necessarily actually taking place. Then he, Radak does, continues in the next statement, forget about the Ben Bakar, that's very simple, El Hana'ar, it says, Vayitain El Hana'ar, El Hamishares, whoever the waiter was. He had lots of waiters in his entourage. We know of, we've spoken about, how many people? 318 people are together with Avraham. We saw that in the last parsha we learned in Lech Lecha. And Ubidrash Ze Yishmael. The Medrash claims that that this Na'ar is not just any old Mishare. It happens to be Yishmael, and as stated by others, Kidei Lechancho B'mitzvot. In order to educate him and to teach him what to do, he invited Yishmael to participate at this particular time.
But if all of this was a dream, and none of these things
happened,
and none of these things really took place, so how are we learning from the Mido that Abraham, he didn't do anything?
No,
but that's it.
The image is in your mind that he did it, because you read it in the text. So why does the Torah share this part of the dream, which is totally irrelevant in terms of a communication from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, to teach? And what are we supposed to learn with Yishmael? That the best way to educate is to get them involved, not to lecture at them and, you know, to talk to them. Talk to them. Yeah. Was anybody at the Shir Sunday morning, Rav Stav? Rav Stav Shir. So Rav Stav, who is the head of Rabbanei Tzohar, unfortunately he lost in the election, the last Rav Rashi election, to Rabbi Lau, because Rabbi Stav is not politically connected to any of the parties which control the Rabbanut, particularly the right wing parties. And he said, he quoted a fascinating Rav Kook about, remind me, there's this comment about Yishmael. He said there are two conflicting gemaras about how we educate people, about how do we get them to observe mitzvot. So there's one gemara that says, it's a very famous one, that kofin oso ad shiyomar rotze ani, that you can even hit him, strike him, whether it's anybody or anybody in Beis Din, to get you to observe any mitzvah in the Torah. I don't want to eat matzah. Okay, Beis Din comes and gives you, takes out the whip and whips you as many times as necessary in order to, you say, okay, I'll eat a piece of matzah. That's one way.
Where is
that? It's in many places. It's many gemaras that say that. Yeah. So his claim is that secular Israelis perceive the observant community in Medinat Yisrael as operating only with that idea. That they want to coerce us to observe mitzvot. And, you know, in certain areas, they are not terribly wrong. In certain areas. As you well know, if a guy wants to have a bus to go to the beach on Shabbos in Yerushalayim and Tel Aviv, that's too bad. He's got to pay for a cab. He can't have a bus. Buses don't run. In Haifa, the buses run. Because there are no, everything was done the status quo as it was in 1948. There were no buses in 1948 in Haifa. So the status quo, there were no buses. Okay. So now we can't prohibit buses. There were no buses. In Yerushalayim and Tel Aviv, there were buses, and we're going to stop running them on Shabbos. Same thing if a guy wants to marry somebody who the halacha says you can't marry. Well, that person can't get married in Medinat Yisrael. It's to go to Cyprus, exactly, and get married civilly there. So in certain, you cannot buy chametz, you cannot make chametz in Medinat Yisrael throughout the 8 days of Pesach. No Jew is allowed to produce chametz. You can do it in your house. But not one bakery is allowed to bake one piece of chametz throughout the 7 days in Eretz Yisrael. This year, 8 days, because of Shabbos. Again, a lot of these people are not happy with it. So they have something to be concerned about. However, there is another attack, which is equally, it's the same type of Rambam. Rambam quotes both of these positions, saying that what you should do is, you speak to the person, you try to explain what the mitzvah is, and that's it. And if you succeed, fine. If not, you know, maybe some other occasion that person will. So it's an out, everybody's asked that question on the Rambam. And Rav Kook said, for some generations, Rambam number one is right. For other generations, Rambam number two is correct. So where you had a situation, and he spoke about children, the question is, should I wait? That was the question posed. Very simple. Should I wake up my son to go to Daven, or before Zman Kriya Shema, on a Shabbos morning, or on a Sunday morning, where there's no school, and he doesn't want to go? What should I do? So Rav Kook said, just wake him up, say, you know, Zman Kriya Shema, that's it. No more badgering, and that's it. For our generation, his task, Rabbi Stav, is to convince the secular world that we are not looking to bash religion over their head, but to show them the beauty of it, to invite them to come. And he quoted this incredible statistic that about 80% of Israelis fast on Yom Kippur. But less than 40% come to shul. They fast, but they don't come to shul. Why? Because their shul represents the establishment. And they look at the shul as being representative of that which is being coerced upon them. Stay away from the shul. I want to identify with Am Yisrael on my own. So I choose to fast on Yom Kippur. 91% go to a Seder. That's fine. It's a personal thing. You join. They have Jewish identity, there's no doubt. But they don't want to be coerced. And the way to do it is to, you know, inspire a child or anybody else. So it's an important position. Hopefully he'll be successful. He'll be successful. Take a look now at the Ramban on the right-hand side of page number one. So the Ramban writes, first he quotes Rashi in the first two lines, then he says it's a medrash. Then he writes at the end of line 3, V'lo yadanu loma hirbe belechem kol kach l'shlosha anashim. Why did he have so much food for three people? Ulai yada histalkut hama'achal harishon rishon. What does that mean? Histalkut hama'achal harishon rishon. That the first thing that you serve goes very quickly. Goes very quickly. So what was the first thing that he served? It was the bread. So he knew the bread is going to go. These guys, who knows when was the last time they ate? So we all, you know, we all know that. The hu kimarbeh olot la mizbeah. It's as if somebody is adding korbanot, korban olah on the mizbeach. O shesoadu gidolei beiso imahem likvodam. Who said only three people sat down at the table? Avraham, as we just said, has 318 people. Some of them were dignitaries, hopefully, or special people. And those, some of those special people, in honor of the distinguished guest, joined them at the meal. So I needed food for lots of people, says the Ramban. And that's why he prepared such a huge quantity. Very simple. You don't need any fancy interpretation. Valderech ha-pshat, if you want to know what the simple pshat is, I'll tell you. Mahari shlosim kemach la'asot mehem soles. Just like that kemach solet is the refined. So you need a bigger quantity, and then you wind up with a smaller quantity. V'hinei hotziya mikol ha-shalosh se'in solet nikiya. Very refined flour. Now it continues on page 2. Oh, ma'at. So nikiya ma'at. Yeah. Then take...
Does anybody say that...
Well, one second. Yeah, go right ahead.
Does anybody say that tomato is for them to take along on the trip?
I have not seen that. It has not. I have not seen that.
Sounds Jewish, right?
It's for later.
Yeah. Now the Ramban continues, and he says, "V'hatam v'el habakar ratz Avraham." He is going to offer another perspective for Avraham's rush. Lahagid rov chishko b'nedivut, to teach us how much he meant, how much servicing others meant to him. That's the standard, as we've seen before. Ha'adam ha'gadol ha'shayihoyu b'veito. Shmone asar, we're on page 2 now. In the middle of page 2. Shmona asar ushlosh meyot. 318 people, ish sholev cherev. Each one was able to carry armored heavy swords. Vehu zakein meod. He is very old, Avraham. Vechalush bemilato.
They too.
We don't know how old the other guys are. His gang. We know he is, and he's very weak as a result having Brit Milah. Halach hu be'atzmo el ohel sarah lizareis otab asiyat halecha. Why do I emphasize the speed factor? Not because they have to get to stone, not because it wants to show you his intensity to observe a mitzvah, specifically to highlight the fact that despite the fact that he was an old man, and just had undergone the mitzvah brit milah and a weakened condition, nonetheless, eloift, vayimaher, ratz, elabakar, ratz Avraham. Va'acharechein, ratz el mokom abakar. Levaker misham ben bakar rachvatov la'asot le'orchav. Ve'lo osa kol ze al yad echad mimishartav, ha'omdim lefanav. Even though he had plenty of help available, he chose not to seek any help, but rather do it himself. Yeah. Good. Let's focus now on the next pasuk, on Rashi. Go back to Rashi. It's on page 2. And then there is... Let me see what page is there. No, please, for before that, go to page 3 and look at the Kli Yakar. Again, it's not a very positive comment about the overwhelming majority of people in this room. I am protected. I am a protected class. So it says, this is the Kli Yakar, Mahari Shlosim Kemach Solet. Beperek HaPoalim in Maseches Bav Metzia, the sixth perek called Hasocher HaPoalim, Masik includes Kisiv Kemach Uksiv Solet. It says Kemach, unrefined, Solet, refined. Omar Rabbi Yitzchak, Mikan Shahaisha Eineha tzara be'orchim yoter min ha'ish. Women are a little more reluctant to share their possessions with guests than the men are. Piresh Rashi. How do I explain the Rashi? Hu amar solet. Avraham said to offer these people bread made out of solet, refined flour. Vehi amra kemach. And she said, no, unrefined flour is perfectly okay. Ki behepech zeh ein li mutkla. Had we said the reverse, that Avraham said, give her the what? The unrefined flour. And she would have said what? Given the flour, the refined, that makes no sense. Why not? Ki im hu yomar kemach. If he would say kemach, which is the unrefined, eich tihiyehi risha'a v'shilta'a likach yoser mimashitziva labala. How could she dare to contradict her husband who said, take the kemach? Plus, it doesn't belong to her. Shaharei hakol shelo. Everything legally belongs to him. Avolimma 8, behotzoas hadavar. But to, if Avraham said solet, and she says what? Only give kemach. That was for what reason? Efshar shehi kimichanefet liba'ala bazeh. Maza chanifa. It's not a very positive word. Where you give somebody flattery just to score some points. So Sarah is now going to try to create points in Avram's eyes by saying, I am so concerned about our assets. You're offering solet. You know what? Maybe I'll make it only out of kemach, out of the unrefined flour. Afal pi shelashon hakatuv mashma, even though the simple pshat is she'Avraham amar kemach solet. It's not that one word was said by Avraham and one was said by... The simple pshat is that Avraham issued both words. Of course he did. Mikol makom hu amar kemach la'amilan shel tabachim v'solet le'ugot. So there's no reason to say, he acknowledges, to say what I said. But he finds this compelling. He didn't have to quote this Gemara Bava Metzia. Why did he quote it? There are lots of Gemaras. Not everybody quotes everything. It's because he somehow related to it. And it's again an attitude that has, thank God, drastically changed. Sometimes the Gemara and Rishonim make statements about women which are very difficult to comprehend. Extremely difficult to comprehend. Tosafot in Masechet Pesachim, when discussing who can serve as an agent to do bedikat chametz in your house. So the Gemara says everybody can do bedikas chametz. Everybody. But a woman might not be able to. Why? A child, this, an agent. No, that's not what it says. No. It says, so Tosafot says, I'm afraid to say it, Nashim Atzlaniyot. They're lazy.
Especially Eric.
They're lazy. It's just, and they're not going to do a good job. It's one of the most absurd things I ever heard. Atzlani. So the Rav said, I'm going to at least try to defend what Tosos has in mind. He says, of course women are not lazy. But they don't like when their husband shirks his responsibility and says, please do this because I want to watch the Yankee game. The halacha of bedikas bayis is assigned to the head of the household. The assumption is, at least at that time, the head of the household, today that has changed as well, the head of the household was the husband in the time of Rishonim. So the husband's expectation is he should go through the tircha, the effort of doing it. So she doesn't appreciate the fact that he asks her to fulfill his responsibility. And therefore, she's not going to do the job properly. Where she accepts the responsibility, such as maintaining the kashrut of the house, of course she's far from lazy, far more careful than great scholarly husbands. Great scholarly husbands. They're all famous, you've heard them, right? Where the Rev once went into the kitchen and started cooking something, and his wife and his mother told him, get out of here, you're going to trafe up my kitchen. Trafe, because you only know Shulchan Aruch, you don't know what to do. I know how to keep the kitchen clean. Okay, but anyhow, I could have skipped this, I didn't have to show this to you, but I want to show it to you just to get you upset. Because you should at least know what it says. And it's just I know.
Is that why they didn't want women to study Gemara?
No. They studied because they thought that they were simpletons. That's the explanation. They are simpletons and cannot handle the very sophisticated dialogue of the Talmud. And it happens to be true if you have no background or education. Anybody, not only a woman, a man who doesn't have any background education, you sit him down in front of a Gemara, it's also pretty complicated and hair-splitting. Once women have received education, they can handle anything that a man can handle. Anything. I give you my word. If I were to have a men's Chumash class, I would not teach the class any differently than I'm teaching you. No different. If I have the Mishnah class on Wednesday nights, the Gemara class, I would teach the same sugya in the exact same fashion to Musmachim. Because I know you can handle it. Sometimes the pace has to be a little slower, but because the lack of familiarity, but you can handle anything. Handle anything. I once had a student when I taught in Frisch. She was the best Gemara student in the class, and I called her Beryl, which is the Rav's nickname. His name was Yosef Ber. Beryl, his family used to call him Beryl, Yiddish name. I nicked him, and she is now a parent of a student at TABC, and she knows every time I have to call her, I say, Beryl, can I speak to Beryl? She knows that she's going to be called Beryl. Ad hayoy mazah. Good. Let's go back now to page 2.
Did Abraham know? You have said that he didn't know they were angels.
We don't know. There are two interpretations. That's it. We don't know. Yeah. So take a look at this is the Rashi that I mentioned. I mentioned this. I showed it to you last week. But if you weren't here, Rashi in Pasuk Chet on the left hand side. Vayikachem avichalav velechem lo hevi. He never brought the bread that Sarah had baked. It says Vayikachem avichalav. What happened to the bread? He asks, so the simple interpretation is, of course he brought the bread, and the Torah doesn't have to tell us about it. Why? Because it already said to bake the bread. And if you're baking the bread, quite obviously, what did you do with it? You brought it to the table. The Torah is reporting in this pasuk something that there was no reference to before. So if there was no reference, I have to now state it. So Rashi is the Medrash, which Rashi chooses to quote, says v'lechem lo hevi l'fi shepirsa sarah nida shechazar la orach kanashim oto hayom. She became a nida that day in order to prove to her that she was going to indeed have a child, and therefore Avraham observed the halacha which I told you, chulin shena'asu al taharat hakodesh, ordinary foods which I treat with the halachic sanctity of holy items. So challah, bread, when you are mafresh challah, and you are metameh it, you don't eat it. We eat it, of course. But somebody who's trying to train themselves to remain tahora will not eat it, and therefore the bread was not brought. V'nitmei ta'isa. Fine, that's Rashi's comment. And in fact, what I just said is on the right-hand side, Rashbam. He knows that his grandfather just quoted this medrash. He knows that. Rashi's grandfather was Rashi. Vayika chema v'chalav, lefi pshuto shel mikra, lo hutzrach lefaresh, shehevi et halechem ala shulchan. I don't have to mention it because it's documented in the text that it was baked and obviously brought. Ela ahatosefet shelo amar lohem hutzrach lomar shehivi havat pat ahashulchan eino chidush. Everybody brings bread to the meal. Why to the table? Why? Because that is the essence of a meal at that time. I told you that a couple of weeks ago. The Gemara operates, the Halacha operates with the assumption that bread is the primary item at every single meal. So here, I don't have to say it. Of course he brought it to the table. Aval hachem'ah, v'hechalav, v'habasar, she'eino mizuman l'chol ha'orachim. I don't feed everybody tongue. I don't feed everybody, blintzes. What is it? That is only for special guests. Hutzrach lifareish. Therefore, I had to mention these couple of things. So the Rashbam, as he always is, the classic Pashtun, doesn't like to get involved in this. Please go to page 4 for a minute. And this midrash surprised me. Eish Eschayil is an extremely important perek in Tanakh. It's the last perek of Sefer Mishlei, perek Lamed Aleph, composed by Shlomo HaMelech. And most people, if you ask them, if I ask you who did he write this poem in honor of, you would say his wife, one of his many wives. But it's correct. We know for a fact he wrote it for his mother. His mother who rebuked him. And here is the Medrash quoted by Rabbi Kiveger to explain it. Shlomo HaMelech built the first Beit HaMikdash. On the eve of the opening day, he threw a gigantic party. Gigantic party. The Medrash says the Egyptian Philharmonic Orchestra was invited to play. That's what it says. The Egyptian Philharmonic Orchestra was invited to play at the Alot HaShachar, daybreak at that day, was at 5:52. And the key to the Beit HaMikdash was underneath his pillow. The Kohen Gadol comes to the house at about 5:45 to get the key to open up and start the Beit HaMikdash when it's supposed to be started, as soon as daybreak comes. Knocks on the door. Batsheva answers the door and says, "King is sleeping. Come back in an hour." Okay, comes back 6:45. Knocks on the door. Says, "King is sleeping." Knocks on the door again. King is sleeping. At 9:45, Batsheva has had it with her son Shlomo, and she wakes him up and bashes into him. "How dare you sleep late on the opening day of the Beit HaMikdash? How dare you sleep late?" And in tribute to the rebuke that his mother gives him for sleeping late, he sings Eish Eschayil Miyimza. That's the history of Eish Eschayil. It was very fortunate that she had that good judgment. Very fortunate. Otherwise, we would have to get up very, very early in the morning to daven shacharis. Our tefillot correspond not to the theoretical time when they offered, when you could have offered the Korban Tamid, the daily sacrifice in the morning. It corresponded to the time when they actually did bring the Korban Tamid. That's why Rabbi Yehuda says you're only allowed to daven Shacharit until 4 hours into the day. Chachamim say until 12, midday. Because theoretically, the morning is still midday. But we don't paskin that. We say you're only allowed to daven until 10, 4 hours into the day. Because the latest they ever brought it was 10 o'clock. You know when? On that day. That was the only day they brought it as late as 10 o'clock. Not, from there on in, it was always brought early in the morning, as soon as daybreak was reached. So we would have to daven every day at daybreak had Shlomo not slept and had his mother not allowed him to sleep the extra couple hours. So we thank Batsheva, not only for the poem, but for this as well. Here this medrash says that Eishes Chayil is kineged Avraham and Sarah. For Avraham Zaken, with this I close today. Zeh she'amar ha-katuv, Eishes Chayil mi yimtza, hadvarim al mi ne'emru, who was this said, who said Eishes Chayil? So the Medrash says, the next line, towards the end, Eishes Chayil zu Sarah. And he quotes a pasuk every single time. I want you to look at just a couple of lines later. Quotes our pasuk. Yeah, where is that again? Yeah. It's about
six lines up
from the bottom.
Right.
Chagra be'oz masneha.
Seven, eight
lines from the bottom of that section. Chagra be'oz masneha. She'omar la Avraham mahari shlosim kemach solet. When did she gird herself? Chagra be'oz, with strength? When Avraham told her, please go ahead, she rallied all of her strength, her forces, and quickly delivered. So this particular midrash goes line by line of Eishes Chayil and finds something in Avraham and Sarah's life to match up this one. Again, it was a surprise. I'd never heard that it applies to Avraham and Sarah. But here you have the Medrash Tanchuma offering this, and Avraham did this as a tribute. It's quoted on the pasuk of Vayavo Avraham Livkot Lisara Velispoda. The hesped, the eulogy that he gave from Sarah, and that happens to be the origin why at a woman's levaya they will often read Eishes Chayil. Because Avraham recited it as his part of his tribute to Sarah at her eulogy. We'll stop here. Continue next of all. Yes. Hold on a second. Just want to make an announcement on behalf of Lamdeinu. Tomorrow, Yom HaTzmaut, they're having a Yom HaTzmaut community celebration only for you guys. Tomorrow, May 9th at Beth Aaron, starting at 9, going till 2 o'clock. Everybody, they're having Tfilah Chagigit, a breakfast, live music, Israeli films, lunch, Tehillim and Hatikva.
Nice.
Everybody is cordially invited to attend. And tonight is the community-wide and the Jewish Center, beginning at 7 o'clock. Yes.
I have a little junior
Right.
And we've just been at the end of each parasha. I try to find a few things. So we're going to use this new dress.
Excellent. Perfect. Excellent. No problem.
And my husband follows his father's